Often, subtle differences in parental or instructional style can make a huge difference. Entity theorists tend to have been told that they did well when they've succeeded, and that they weren't any good at something when they failed. So, a kid aces a math test, comes home, and hears, "Wow, that's my boy, as smart as they come." Then next week, Johnny fails an English test and hears, "What's wrong with you? Can't you read?" Or, "Your mommy never liked reading either. Obviously, it's not your thing." So the boy figures he's good at math and bad at English. And what's more, he links success and failure to ingrained ability. Learning theorists, on the other hand, are given feedback that's more process-oriented. After doing well in an English essay, a little girl might be congratulated by her teacher with, "Wow, great job, Julie. You're really becoming a wonderful writer. Keep up the good work." And if she does badly on a math test, her teacher might write, "Study a little harder for the next one, and you'll do great. And feel free to ask me questions anytime after class. That's what I'm here for." So Julie learns to associate effort with success and feels that she can become good at anything with some hard work. She also feels as though she's on a journey of learning, and her teacher is a friendly assistant in her growth. Johnny thinks he's good at math and bad at English, and he focuses on quick results as opposed to long-term process. But what happens when he does badly on a hard math test down the line? Will he be prepared to learn the right lessons from life's inevitable challenges? Unfortunately, he may not. It's clear that parents and teachers have an enormous responsibility in forming the theories of intelligence of their students and children, and it's never too late. It's critical to realize that we can always evolve in our approaches to learning. Studies have shown that in just minutes, kids can be conditioned into having a healthy learning theory for a given situation. In one study, children were given different instructions about what the aim of their task was. Some kids were told that solving certain problems would help them with their schoolwork in the future, and other kids were told that they'd be judged based on their results. In other words, half the kids received mastery-oriented instructions, and half the kids received helplessness-producing instructions. Needless to say, the kids who were temporarily mastery-oriented did much better on the tests. So, how does all this affect us in our day-to-day lives? Fundamentally, the key to pursuing excellence is to embrace an organic, long-term learning process and not to live in a shell of static, safe mediocrity. Usually, growth comes at the expense of previous comfort or safety. The hermit crab is a colorful example of a creature that lives by this aspect of the growth process, albeit without our psychological baggage. As the crab gets bigger, it needs to find a more spacious shell. So the slow, lumbering creature goes on a quest for a new home. If an appropriate new shell is not found quickly, a terribly delicate moment of truth arises. A soft creature that's used to the protection of built-in armor must now go out into the world, exposed to predators and all its mushy vulnerability. That learning phase in between shells is where our growth can spring from. Someone stuck with an entity theory of intelligence is like an anorexic hermit crab, starving itself so it doesn't grow to have to find a new shell.